Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
I'm delighted to welcome now, I think it's fair to say, a music legend, Mike Scott of the Waterboys. Hello.
Hello, Brendan.
Is it your birthday today?
It is, yes. I'm working on my birthday.
Happy birthday. Thank you. This is not work.
I'm rehearsing after this.
You're doing
something
nice
for
your birthday. Okay. So you're not doing anything nice, no, apart from this?
Hanging out with my daughter. That's
yeah,
nice
yeah,
enough.
But listen, what more would you want? So, new Waterboys album coming and a tour in 2025, big Irish dates. And we'll talk about all that today. And we'll also talk about your life in five songs that you've picked for us. So will we just get stuck into your first song today? So it's San Francisco by Scott McKenzie, a kind of a 60s hippie anthem. So when you were a kid, were you conscious of the 60s going on around you?
Of course, yes. Yeah. I was born in 1958, so I was 7 or 8 when the Summer of Love happened. And I remember all that. I remember the procession of incredibly great pop records that would parade on the radio and on Top of the Pops on TV. The Beatles, my parents had Beatles records, Sgt. Pepper, Revolver, and San Francisco by Scott McKenzie. It was a very beautiful record from that Summer of Love, a very optimistic record. And there was
Did it feel like a special time, an optimistic time? As a kid, could you take in there was something going on here in the 60s?
Well, I had nothing to compare it with, Brendan, so it was just what I grew up knowing. And, of course, I thought, this is always going to be like this. Unfortunately, no. But it was brilliant while it lasted. And I remember my mother being very swept up in the spirit and saying to me one day, you know, the flower people are coming. Wonderful optimism of the time.
Okay, let's hear some of that optimism now. This is Mike Scott's first choice today, Scott McKenzie and San Francisco.
All across the nation, such a strange vibration, people in motion. There's a whole generation with a new explanation.
San Francisco by Scott McKenzie, Mike Scott's first choice today. Actually, it's a song that's been destroyed by overplaying. And then when you come fresh to it and listen to it again and somebody says, you know, let's play this and channel the feeling, it sounds fantastic.
It's a beautiful record. Yeah. He's singing so beautifully behind the beat as well. I don't know if you noticed that, but as a singer,
is he?
Now
yeah.
I notice that. He's just behind the beat, so masterful.
So listen, you mentioned your mum there, and I think your mum kind of reared you because your dad left the family home. But he gave you a parting gift, I believe, a guitar and a Rolling Stones album.
He did. Yeah? How do you know that? The first guitar and Let It Bleed by the Rolling Stones.
And was that the beginning of your story as a musician then?
I guess so. I had a guitar now. It leaned against the wall for about a year before I figured out how to play a chord. But once I had my first three chords, I was off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then your mum, she taught English literature. And I feel this another formative thing then that, did she bring you to the Yeats Summer School in Ireland when you were a small child? Yeah?
When I was 11, yes, to Sligo, yeah. She was a participant in the summer school. I think, apparently, I was at a Seamus Heaney talk or poetry reading. I don't remember it.
Yeah. But he obviously went in there anyway
because
Yeats was hugely important to you always, wasn't he?
Oh, yes. He was spoken about in hushed tones as well. Yeats in the house.
Yeah. So the Rolling Stones and Yeats, it's the perfect combination,
exactly,
when you think about it. So your next song then, we're not quite at punk yet. We've Substitute by The Who.
Yeah.
So why did you pick this?
Well, this song I always remember, I remembered it from the 60s, but when I was a teenager, I was into bands like Pink Floyd. And, you know, I used to come into school, and before the teacher got in, me and my mates would write The Floyd on the blackboard. And we had this English teacher called Mr. McGowan. He was a bit of a twit, actually. I didn't like him very much. But he said one great thing that always remained with me and that educated me. He looked at our writing of The Floyd on the blackboard and he said, substitute by The Who, that's a better song than anything The Floyd ever did. And you know, I went back and re-listened to Substitute and was blown away by the lyrics, and I realised McGowan was right.
Yeah, okay, let's hear it. Substitute by The Who, Mike Scott's second choice today. That's Substitute by The Who, and that is Mike Scott of the Waterboys' second musical choice today. So then, Mike, punk came along. You were on the scene, ran a fanzine and all that kind of thing, yeah?
I was, yeah. I was 17 when punk rock happened, just the perfect age.
Yeah.
I remember the thrill of hearing Anarchy in the UK for the first time in a local record shop, and how amazing that sounded, the energy that was unleashed by punk.
And did you then manage to kind of inveigle your way into Patti Smith's entourage at one stage as a young lad?
I did, yeah. You've researched me well. You've got my number.
You wouldn't talk to anyone before the interview, so we had to kind of...
Well, Patti Smith was an American punk poetess. Of course, she's still very well known. Back in the mid-70s, she made a very kind of primitive rock and roll. It was intellectual primitive rock and roll, and I really fell in love with that. I was just before punk rock really hit. And yes, I went and hung out with her in her hotel in London in 78 when I was 19, I think.
You didn't like her, did you?
I liked her and disliked her. She was scary after the show. She was... You know, I think she was new to stardom then. I'm sure she's got the measure of it now. But back then, I think she was still high on the energy of the show afterwards, and she was quite scary to be around.
Okay. So then you dropped out of college, I think, to kind of pursue the music, and there was various bands. Yeah, and then the Waterboys started in, what, 83?
First record, 83,
And I suppose you were, at that time, kind of lumped in with that big kind of Celtic rock sound, U2, Simple Minds, all that kind of thing. You're part of that kind of wave. And you toured with U2 early on and everything. I saw you say somewhere that you felt quite competitive with U2.
Yeah, well, of course, I thought I wrote much better songs than they did. I thought he was a good front man.
Yeah.
The lad at the front of the band was good and a good guitar player, but I thought I wrote better songs. It's good to be competitive, I think.
Yeah.
I still feel the same.
Yeah. And I get the vibe as well, like reading things you said here and there. You feel you might have taught U2 a thing or two, do you?
I can hear Waterboys influence in several of their records.
Yeah,
yes.
Which ones?
Where the streets have no name, you saw the whole of the moon. I rest my case.
Okay, the lawyers are freaking out now. We've seven lawyers watching, listening to the show at all times, and they're going crazy. Yeah. When you say competitive about writing songs, interesting. Tell us the story about how you wrote your big breakthrough song, I think, The Hole of the Moon.
Hole of the Moon. Now, I was in New York. I'd gone to New York. It was in winter to meet with a prospective manager. And I had a girlfriend at the time, and she came to stay with me in the hotel in New York. And we were walking down one of the big avenues in New York at night. And she said to me, you know, is it easy to write songs? So I was showing off for my new girlfriend. I said, yes, dead easy. Look, I'll write one now. And I looked around for some inspiration, and there was a moon in the sky. It was either a crescent or a full moon. I no longer remember. Although, to tell you the truth, I did once look at one of those old almanacs to find out, but I've forgotten. It doesn't seem to be important to me. But I saw the moon, and I thought, okay, I saw the crescent, you saw the whole of the moon. Wrote it down on a piece of paper in my pocket. And when we got back to the hotel, I wrote the rest of the first verse, and my girlfriend was impressed. Job done. Mission accomplished.
Is that why people write songs in general, do you think? Is it back to the old basic thing of to impress girls?
No, usually? No, that's a rare thing for me. Yeah. And, you know, I read Paul McCartney one time saying he got into a band just so he could get girls. I don't believe it. Paul McCartney loves music with every cell in his body.
Yeah.
Same as I do.
And was the Hole of the Moon a tribute to Prince?
No. No, we put a little greeting to him on the record label.
Fair play.
Yeah, myself and Carl Wallinger, who worked with me on The Hole of the Moon in The Waterboys, we loved Prince so much, we put a little greeting on the label. Greetings to Prince, you saw The Hole of the Moon. And of course, people thought that was an indication that the song was about him, which it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. It bespeaks a certain confidence, though, that you saw yourselves as being on the level where we will give Prince a nod on our...
Well, it was fraternal, you know, and you know, he did The Hole of the Moon. He sang it a couple of times himself.
He did, didn't he?
In concert, towards the end of his life, yeah.
Yeah, that must have been a great thrill, wasn't
Fantastic.
it?
Fantastic. You know, he did it two times, Brendan. He did it once as a drum and bass funk piece, which I've heard, there's a bootleg of that.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Songs on YouTube. And he did it once as a solo piano ballad. I've never heard that. If I could find someone who had a recording of that, I'd love to hear it.
Okay, well, somebody out there might have that. There's been lots of covers, actually. Do you like to hear somebody covering The Hole of the Moon, or does it annoy you? Or
I love it. And any of my songs, I love them being covered.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when people change them and make them their own.
What would be your favourite Hole of the Moon covers?
Now, my very favourite Hole of the Moon cover is the gay disco version by Boys of a New Age. It is banging, man.
Yeah. And of course, Graham Norton.
Brilliant. Love that.
Yeah. Okay, your next song is a Thin Lizzy song. I think, did you first move to Ireland just around the time that Phil Lynott died? Is that right?
Yeah, and that's why I've chosen this song, Brendan. Okay. I arrived in Ireland I didn't know then that I was going to stay. As far as I knew, I was coming in for a couple of weeks. But as I landed at the airport, Steve Wickham met me in the arrivals hall. We got into a taxi. It was January the 4th, 1986. And don't believe a word was on the radio. And then when the song finished, the radio announcer said, Phil Lynott's just died. And it was all Thin Lizzy songs all the way into Dublin on the radio. And I've never forgotten that. Marked my arrival in Ireland. And you know, I never met Phil, of course, because he was gone by the time I got here. But I did encounter him once backstage at a concert in London in the late 70s, someone else's concert. And I turned a corner and this apparition walked towards me. This 6 foot two or three, the corkscrew hair, the black skin, and he had a powder blue suit. He was the most charismatic person I've ever seen.
Yeah. Okay, here's Thin Lizzy, Don't Believe a Word, Mike Scott's third choice.
I wrote this song for you. There's just not been some other silly pretty girl I'm singing to. Don't believe a word, for words are so easily spoken, and your heart is just like that promise made to be broken. Thank you.
Tin Lizzy, Don't Believe a Word. That's Mike Scott's third choice. Yeah, that's brilliant. I didn't know that very well. That's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
That move to Ireland, sometimes kind of portrayed a bit as if you were running away from everything.
Yeah, no, I came to Ireland to stay with Steve Wickham for a couple of weeks. And I just loved it here. It was good to get away from the music business and all those kind of pressures. And I enjoyed the musical scene in Dublin, but no, I wasn't running away from anything. I just loved it here.
And then you headed off to Spittle. Ultimately, you finished the Fisherman's Blues album down there.
Yes, indeed.
And a very different musical direction, hugely successful for you as well. Did Ireland change you?
Yeah, definitely. I grew into manhood in Ireland.
Yeah?
Yeah. Ireland taught me, educated me. Yeah.
Go on.
Well, I first got married in Ireland. It was the first place I'd ever noticed the seasons of the year.
Yeah.
You know, I remember going to the west of Ireland, it's 87, 88, and actually noticing autumn, spring, what they meant, what they felt like for real. You know, just taking things like for granted before. I feel like I came fully alive when I came to Ireland.
Yeah, wow, okay. Next musical choice is the Nitty Gritty dirt band Lost Highway. Tell me about this.
Well, around that time that I came to Ireland, I met a record producer called Bob Johnson. He'd produced all these Bob Dylan records in the 60s, Johnny Cash at San Quentin, Leonard Cohen records, and he wanted to produce the Waterboys because we were the hot new band. So we met him and I befriended him, and eventually I went to stay with him in his house in California for a while. And while I was there, he taught me all about country music. He played me Willie Nelson records, and he played me the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band's album, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, which was a wonderful celebration of country music with lots of famous old-time country players on it. And I learned several of the songs. They were dead easy to learn, like Lost Highway. And within about an hour of touching down in Dublin after that trip, it was in the Waterboys set, you know, straight in.
Yeah.
And I remember we blagged a four-song set at the Lark in the Park in Galway, August 86, and we played Lost Highway. So it was my way into country music.
Okay. There's an email here. In 1986, while in Sydney, I heard Bob Dylan getting interviewed on the radio. He was asked what his favourite current recent song was, and he said The Hole of the Moon.
Oh, that's very... That's very... I knew he liked the song, but I didn't know he'd said that publicly.
Did you know him? Because, like, I feel there would be a simpatico between you and Bob Dylan.
Yeah, well, Bob was my great musical educator when I was a kid. I listened to him so much. And I did meet him around 85 when The Hole of the Moon came out. We had a mutual friend, and I got this message, would I like to come down to the studio and play with Bob, because he liked The Hole of the Moon, just as your correspondent says. So myself and Stephen Anto from the band, we turned up at the studio to play with Bob. It was a day he was recording with a session band, and Dave Stewart of the Eurythmics was the producer, kind of ringmaster guy.
Yeah.
And Bob was really nice. He was really cool. We chatted with him and we played a few songs. It was great. Nice chap. And I met him again a year later in London. He was filming one of those movies that he did. It was called Hearts on Fire, I think. I never saw it. In fact,
Hearts on Fire, yeah.
Yeah, I was offered a part in that. They sent me the script a few months earlier. Would I play the young rock star? I don't suppose they were offering it to me unless I impressed them at an audition. But I read the script. I thought it was so bad, I wasn't interested. But Bob took it.
Yeah. Bob has made some curious choices in his life, let's face it. Yeah. He'd be the first to admit it, I think. Yeah.
Well, I met him in a house in London. He was renting it. He introduced me to his kids. He was so nice.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to music. So on your fourth music choice, the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band and Lost Highway.
I'm a rolling stone, a deck of cards and a jug of wine. And a woman's lies made a life like mine. Oh, the day we met,
started rolling down that lost highway.
That is the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band and Lost Highway, and that is Mike Scott of the Waterboys' fourth choice today. Mike, have you been lost yourself on the Lost Highway at times?
A few times, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Good character building.
Yeah, really? Yeah. How deep down the hole did you go?
Not so deep. Not so deep that I couldn't get back.
Okay, so mildly off the track. You are a seeker though, aren't you, I think?
You mean like a spiritual seeker?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you know, I was approached in Herbert Park recently by a couple of blokes who were doing some kind of religious, you know, promotion. They're kind of selling their religion, whatever it was. And they came up and they approached me, like, you know, to sell it, whatever it was. And I said to them, do you know, thanks very much and good luck to you, but I'm spiritually self-sufficient.
Yeah, are you? Yeah,
I am.
You did go and live, didn't you, in a kind of a spiritual community in Scotland?
I did. Yes, in Findhorn.
Yeah,
Findhorn in Scotland.
What is it?
It's a community that was founded in the early 60s by not by people who were affected by the pop music of the 60s, by some very square people.
Okay.
And it's a wonderful place actually. I still have a house there. I go there occasionally. I played there, concerts there this past summer, and the basic principle there is that the answers you need or the direction you need in life you can find inside yourself. It's a kind of very self-empowering kind of community, and I found it a very positive influence in my life.
And what did you find there?
Do you know, I had a heart-opening experience, Brendan. I had this strange experience where I did a week-long program at the community, and during the week I started to feel my heart kind of, it was like nothing I'd ever experienced. And I'd been in love lots of times.
Yeah.
And I'd kind of been in love with music as well. But my heart kind of, it was like it was on fire. And all those cliches that you hear about, my heart's on fire, my heart opened. You know, you hear these things. Mm-hmm. Suddenly,
the Holy Spirit came down.
Yeah, that's what it was, yeah. Came out of my head into my heart. And it wasn't, because there was no Jesus or anything like that involved. There was no outer concept. It was in me. It was the most powerful experience I've had in my life.
And did that alter you from there on? Yeah.
It was more a confirmation of what I'd always felt about being a human being.
That
love is what we're actually made of. And the moments when we're most truly ourselves are the moments when we experience a strong love. You know, everyone's experienced it. We all experience love with our family and in certain areas of our lives. And that's when we feel most alive. And that experience in Findhorn reminded me of that and consolidated it for me.
And do you manage to live like that, do you think? Generally,
well, I don't live with my heart on fire every moment of the day, but I've learned lots of tricks that will tricks of remembering that take me back to that and remind me to stay in the present moment, to be aware that everybody that I meet is going through the same challenges of consciousness that I'm going through. Everybody's got their own struggles in life, no matter who they are. Even, you know, Donald Trump, imagine being in his consciousness with all the nonsense that he manages to manifest.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You wouldn't want to have his karma.
No, I often think it must be very hard to be him, yeah.
Yeah.
So, a new album in the new year. What kind of music is it going to be?
It's a mix. It's a rock and roll record. It's got strong Americana flavour, but lots of different kinds of music. It's a concept album, Brendan. I can't say yet what it is because we haven't made the announcement yet. We're going to announce it in early January.
You can announce it now if you want.
I'd love to, but
you could half announce it.
Well,
is there a story? There is.
There is a story. There is a story. It's a narrative record, but if I say what the story is, I'll have given it away.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I'll leave you off. And will we know this incarnation of the Waterboys? Have there been 80 people in the Waterboys?
More than 80. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you on good terms with them all?
Almost all of them, yeah.
That's remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, there were a few. Oh, I can't say the G-O-B-S-H-I-T-E word on live radio, but there were a few of them.
Yeah.
But most of them, yeah.
And do they just organically come and go, or do you kind of decide what you need at any particular time and then gently let them go when you feel the moment has passed?
Well, do you know, the Waterboys is a funny concept. It started as me. I was the only guy with a record deal back in the 80s. And the concept was that I would play with whoever was around or whoever were my latest musical friends and travelling companions. And it's been like that. And some people stay for a long time, like Steve Wickham or Anto or Brother Paul, our keyboard player. He's been with us for 10 years now. And some people come and go much shorter time. And some people really are just hired hands that are just there for the tour. But my favourite lineups of the Waterboys are the more solid ones where people stick around and we build a brother and sisterhood of musicians. That's my favourite bands. Now, I'm glad to say I've got a band like that at the moment.
Okay, good. So you're excited about the gigs next year,
yes,
and tour and all that, yeah? Yeah? Yeah, do you still love it, yeah?
I do, yes. Nothing's better than going out on stage.
So, as your last song today, Mike, you've picked a Taylor Swift song.
Mm. My daughter is a huge fan of Taylor Swift. She's a Swiftie.
Yeah.
And she's got very good taste.
Is she?
She's 11.
Okay.
And a couple of years ago, we got the Folklore album. It was the first Taylor Swift vinyl record she'd had. And I remember her listening to it, and I was over the other side of the room listening to it too, and I thought, it sounded pretty good. And then this song came on called Marjorie, and it had this first line about, never be so clever, you forget to be kind. Never be so kind, you forget to be clever. Man, it just went right to my heart.
Yeah.
And it must be one of my favourite songs ever.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Do your kids have the musical gene, do you think?
They do, yes. My little boy is 7. He's musical too. My daughter's a wonderful singer. She has a beautiful voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes up great melodies, much better than mine.
Will you encourage them into rock and roll?
Oh, I'll encourage them to do whatever they want to do, really. I don't want to be one of these parents that tries to make them do what I did.
Yeah, you feel like a momager, a stage dad, Mike Scott. Okay. The Waterboys play Dublin's Three Arena on July 7th next year. Then they're at the Botanic Gardens in Belfast on July 8th, live at the Marquee in Cork on July 10th. Mike Scott, thank you very much. And this is Mike's fifth and final music choice today. One of his favourite songs ever. This is Taylor Swift and Marjorie. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Brendan.
Never be so kind, you forget to be clever. Never be so clever, you forget to be kind. And if I didn't know better, I'd think you were talking to me now. If I didn't know better, I'd think you were still around. What died didn't stay dead. You're alive in my head. What died didn't stay dead. What died didn't stay dead. You're alive, so alive. Never be so polite, you forget your power.